Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Sarah Posner, an investigative journalist, author, and expert on the intersection of religion and politics. She's the author of God's Prophets, that's P-R-O-F-I-T-S, Faith, Fraud, and the Republican Crusade for Value Voters. And she has an article at The Nation, Will Brett Kavanaugh Pass the Religious Right's New Litmus Test? Welcome to Background Briefing, Sarah Posner.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
And what I find extraordinary is at this moment, the Republicans, the party of family values, have no problem with their hero, President Trump, ripping children from the arms of their parents on the southern borders. The majority of Americans are against it, but the majority of Republicans are not bothered by it. So where is this religious rights litmus test now in terms of family values and all of the things that they stand for, which their leader, who is immensely popular with Republicans, Donald Trump, is hardly an exemplar of family values, of religious values. He's a, twice-divorced libertine, and we won't even get into his possible criminal activity and even the possibility that he's a traitor. So where is this litmus test now? And how does it relate to Brett Kavanaugh?
So the religious right has long wanted a Supreme Court justice who would overturn Roe versus Wade. Trump promised them that during the campaign. But he also promised that he would nominate judges who were protective of what the religious right calls religious freedom. That might not be the religious freedom that other people think of when they think of what the Free Exercise Clause means or what religious freedom means. To the religious right, religious freedom means the ability to be exempt from laws or regulations that they say infringe on their conservative Christian beliefs, that, you know, against same-sex marriage, against abortion, against contraception. So this was a key thing that they were looking for in a judicial nominee. And they were really hoping that Trump would nominate Amy Coney Barrett, who he had previously nominated and got confirmed to the Seventh Circuit, who is just an exemplar of pretty much everything the religious right is looking for in a Supreme Court justice. The fact that he chose Kavanaugh was a little bit of a I wouldn't call it a snub, but he did not really live up to their expectations by nominating Kavanaugh. That doesn't mean that Kavanaugh isn't extremely conservative and likely quite reliable on all of the issues that they're concerned about, but because he hasn't made that sort of the centerpiece of his legal career, he hasn't seen that many cases on the issue, largely because serving in the D.C. circuit, you don't really see that many culture war issues. So they were a little bit more tepid about the Kavanaugh nomination than they would have been, say, if Trump had nominated Coney Barrett. And one religious right group even came out and said, we should oppose Kavanaugh. I think that in the end, they're going to get behind him, but I think that they're a little bit less enthusiastic about it than they would have been with another nominee.
We know that Amy Barrett was championed by Vice President Pence and by Trump's closest informal advisor, Sean Hannity of Fox News. And the fact that he didn't listen to them is a bit surprising. But my understanding is that the meeting that Trump had with Amy Barrett did not go well, whereas the meeting with Kavanaugh went very well. And I have a suspicion that the reason the meeting went well with Kavanaugh was that Trump might well have asked Kavanaugh the same question that he asked James Comey. Are you loyal to me? I want somebody that's loyal to me. And that is in the context of the real possibility that this next Supreme Court justice will be sitting on a case involving the president himself as to whether he can be indicted, whether he can be subpoenaed before a grand jury, whether he can pardon himself, or whether he can pardon his lieutenants that are involved in criminal activity.
Well, I'm not going to speculate about what happened in the meetings between Trump and Kavanaugh and Trump and Coney Barrett. I did read the coverage that he did not click with her and that she did not do well in her interview. I'm not sure that that has anything to do with, and I don't even know if he asked for any kind of loyalty pledge from any of the nominees. I think that it's probably has more to do with the fact, something that you were talking about earlier, just a couple minutes ago, that Trump is not a particularly religious person. I think that Coney Barrett is an extremely religious person and very has grown up in a sort of insular environment and is, let's just say, a lot more straight-laced than Trump is. I think that possibly the getting along better with Kavanaugh might have had just something to do with the way Trump is around men versus the way he is around women. I think that perhaps she might have not, you know, they might not have clicked because they don't really come from the same place on these kind of, you know, religious values.
Right. She's not a porn star or a playmate.
Right.
No, I get
right.
it.
Yeah, far from it. Right. So, but I think the thing to look at with regard to Kavanaugh and whether he would really defend the Constitution in the face of having a case before him where, you know, say a Trump challenge to a possible subpoena from Mueller or a Trump challenge to an indictment from Mueller, hypothetically. I think that what we need to look at is his record, which is pretty lengthy on the extent of, you know, executive power and whether sitting presidents can be subpoenaed or indicted. He's changed his mind about that over the course of his legal career. You know, he thought during the Clinton era that sitting presidents could be indicted, but then later sort of scaled that back when he was during the Bush era. So I think that requires a lot of scrutiny and requires a lot of scrutiny by the Senate Judiciary Committee during his confirmation hearings. And so, I mean, but barring any evidence that Trump out and out asked him for anything, I think that even without that, there's plenty to mine in Kavanaugh's record on that topic.
Well, our previous guest, Gigi Sohn, was talking about the possibility that something went on with Anthony Kennedy. Promises were made. Negotiations were conducted between Kennedy and the White House and via his son, Justin, who's close to Donald Trump Jr. And Justin was the point person at Deutsche Bank that was responsible for lending about $1 billion
right.
to Trump that
right.
kept him going.
Right. Kennedy's son's position in Deutsche Bank, I think we all know that. And we also know now from reporting that potentially, it's not clear what the timing was that Trump and Kennedy met and possibly discussed Kennedy's successor. But I think that, like, there's no evidence that there was a quid pro quo between them. The discussion might have happened about who his successor should be or what his recommendation for that might have happened after Kennedy had already announced his decision to retire. So I don't think it serves anybody to get into the realm of speculation about the possibility of a quid pro quo. I know that given all of the terrible and corrupt things Trump has done in plain sight, that it doesn't stretch the imagination to think that something like that could have happened, but without evidence of it, I'm really reluctant to go there. I do think that, like I said before, that it requires the scrutiny of the Senate Judiciary Committee to look into all of this, but I don't want to go down the path of speculating.
So how do you think, then, the Democrats should proceed in this hearing, in the sense that they have to pull out all the stops? They didn't really fight for Merrick Garland. They probably thought that Hillary Clinton was a shoo-in. But this time around, the indications are that they are going to fight. And what do you do about those wavering Democrats? Because all you have to do is peel off one or two Republicans and perhaps even, Rand Paul, because Kavanaugh is quite pro-government in terms of their ability to surveil American citizens, which is something that we know Rand Paul's opposed to. What can be done, do you think, to stop those wavering Democrats, Manchin, Connolly, Heitkamp, and Tester?
Well, I suspect that the questions around Kavanaugh's views on the Mueller probe, you know, whether he thinks that it has, like some Republicans have claimed, you know, exceeded its time length or its authority or its its mandate, whether he thinks that, you know, it should be ended, whether he thinks that a sitting president can be indicted or subpoenaed. I think those are areas where this is not about ideology, as in, like, is Kavanaugh for or against abortion, for example, but these go kind of to the heart of our democracy and the heart of the separation of powers, and the ability of the judicial branch to do its job without political influence. So, and also about law enforcement being able to do its job without political influence. So I think that those are fruitful areas of inquiry. And I think that if Kavanaugh doesn't have good explanations for why his legal thinking on these matters changed or evolved over the years, and if he doesn't have good answers on basically, you know, defending the Mueller probe from political interference, I think that that is something that could, I mean, I think that setting aside the strategy of it, I think that they have an obligation to the Republic to pursue that line of questioning with him. But I think those are things that the Democrats could hold up as, you know, this, you know, we're defending the Constitution, we're defending the separation of powers, we're defending democracy by asking these questions. These are not about ideology. These are not about litmus tests for or against abortion or what have you. These are the crucial questions facing our democracy right now. And so it would be completely, you know, malpractice of them to not pursue that line of questioning with Kavanaugh, regardless of whether it sways Joe Manchin or Heidi Heitkamp or whatever. I mean, they have an absolute obligation to do that, given all of the circumstances that we just talked about and Kavanaugh's career history and his writing history.
Well, just in closing, though, don't you think that the argument that I think Democrats should make, given who their constituency is, which is middle class and working Americans, although in many people argue that they've kind of abandoned this constituency and gone corporate, but the lines are pretty clearly drawn between corporatists, and this guy is an even greater corporatist than Robert Alito and Gorsuch, all of whom have been put on the court by the Federalist, who clearly talk about all this lofty stuff. At the end of the day, they put on corporatists who expand corporate power at the expense of the worker and the consumer. And just before this whole thing with Kennedy happened, the Supreme Court ruled in Ohio versus American Express in favor of American Express, making it easy for these big companies to pressure workers, suppliers, and customers. So we're all getting screwed as consumers and as workers as more and more power is given to corporate America. And that is a question that's never asked. So why not make that the centerpiece of your argument?
Well, I mean, I don't see why all of these things cannot be the subject of confirmation hearings. I mean, you know, I think that the question of how beholden or dedicated a Supreme Court nominee is to corporate versus individual or little guy or Main Street interests is crucial line of questioning. You're right. But I do think that these questions around the health or the ability of the Mueller probe to continue to its conclusion and for wrongdoers to be held accountable for their wrongdoing is, you know, just absolutely essential for them to drill down into during the confirmation hearings. I can't imagine that is not something that that is going to be at the top of the list.
Well, Sarah Posner, I thank you very much for joining us, and I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with Sarah Posner, who's an investigative journalist, author, and expert on the intersection of religion and politics. She's the author of God's Prophets, that's P-R-O-F-I-T-S, Faith, Fraud, and the Republican Crusade for Value Voters. And she has an article of The Nation, Will Brett Kavanaugh Pass the Religious Right's New Litmus Test? This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Martz. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Alejandra Larivalat. This program is available for podcasting at backgroundbriefing.org, where you can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.